where we explore the farms and gardens of the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm your host, Teresa Retzloff. And as Joanne Rideout mentioned earlier, she and I are going to be talking today about late summer garden and farm to some degree. There's a lot of crossover, but what's happening in your garden in late summer? This is a really busy time of year. There's a lot going on. I think a lot of times people get kind of exhausted by their gardens this time of year. If things are going well, they're probably going really well. And things are going terrible, they're probably going really terrible. And it's probably a combination of the two. Joanne, how's it going in your garden?
Well, you know, this year I've been too terrified to have a garden. And just have not, you know, I realized that I'm one of these people that right now I'm just so busy that it would really be like, you know, plant brutality for me to have a garden, because the plants would be, you know, be sticking out their little arms going, "Where are you going, Mom?" You know, and I would not be there. But so, I mean, we've talked before about the whole thing of that gardens require mindfulness and paying attention to them. But I remember this time of year when I had a garden before, things start looking a little bit sadder. Well, in my case, sadder than usual. And you start wondering, you realize the weather's changing.
Yeah.
And that your plants, some of them are changing in where they're at. And so what should people be thinking about this time of year?
What's interesting, so we're talking, it's mid-August. And it's interesting, it is late, if it's late summer. And we have had we had that very wet spring, and we had a long dry period, and we just had some rain. And the rain was beautiful, and it really cleared things out, washed everything clean. That was amazing, but you can almost feel a change in the air. And I'm not even going to say, like season shifting.
But to say the A word.
But there's a change, and it happens this time of year anyway, but you start to get some cooler nights. The days are getting shorter, and you're actually starting to notice that the days are getting shorter. And the thing is, your plants are noticing it too. And especially if you're growing annual plants, their whole purpose is to reproduce. It's to flower or fruit and set seed and for their next generation and die. And so they're doing that frantically right now. So if it's flowers that are blooming, they're blooming like crazy. And if it's beans coming on or tomatoes or cucumbers or whatever, they're coming on like crazy. They're coming on hard and fast. It's almost overwhelming. All of the insects out there also are noticing this. So the pollinators, all of that, are just going crazy. The bees are stocking up for winter. All the flowers are blooming, so all the bugs are going around, but all of the bad bugs are out there too. So you're going to have explosions of aphids and cabbage moth, the caterpillars that love to eat all of your brassicas. All kinds of things. Flea beetles are coming back on my farm again. There's just so much going on. It feels like this cacophony going on in the garden. I think if it had a soundtrack, it would just be this huge clashing kind of
cymbals and drums.
Yeah.
And
so, I mean, if you feel a little bit crazy, you're not crazy. This is just a crazy time of year. And it can be hard, you know, for gardeners. You know, this is also a busy time of year. A lot of times people are going on vacation, or they're just coming back from vacation. They're trying to get kids ready for school. Maybe they got a lot going on with their jobs. And so when your garden is just like going gangbusters and you don't have time to pay attention, it can feel really overwhelming. So I also feel like this is a really good time of year to take stock and get a notebook. You know, just, it can be like a cheap nothing notebook, but just have a notebook that's maybe your garden record. And it doesn't have to be beautiful. You don't have to draw beautiful pictures. It's just for you. But write down a date and write down like what's working and what's not. Take pictures with your phone or with something that has a timestamp on them or a date, because that can also really help you remember what was blooming, what was in abundance, what was going on. And I do that on my farm all the time now. If I'm trying to have a record of when did that plant start producing, when was it pretty much over, when did I have that huge bumper crop, when did those insects start to show up, I'm using my camera and then some notes to help me remember. And I'm just taking the notes now. They're not pretty. They're covered with mud. It's, you know, whatever. But later on in the winter, I can go back and look at them again when I've got a little bit more time and I can reflect and I've got some record. Because there's nothing worse than sitting there in January going, when did that start to come?
Yeah,
when was that thing? And you just can't remember. You just can't. So...
Well, so can you, just to go back to something you said before, what's a flea beetle and why should we fear them?
It flea sounds beetles. Ominous. Oh, flea beetles are terrible. Not everyone gets them, and I feel like particularly cursed that I do. I think, and I'm not alone. I know there's some other, certainly other farmers I've spoken to that are having problems with them. So they look like little tiny fleas. They're tiny, tiny black insects. And it's a beetle, but it looks like a flea and it hops around. They kind of fly from plant to plant. Mm. And they...
Flying fleas. That sounds very bad.
And they attack... there's flea beetles that attack everything in the brassica family. There's certain things that they like more than others.
And that's broccoli.
Like broccoli, kale, cabbage, anything in that kind of family. They really love some of the more tender greens like bok choy and napa cabbage and mustard greens. They seem to really favor those, but boy, they'll go after everything. And I had a huge explosion of them earlier this spring that was just killing my kale, which made me feel just humiliated as a grower.
I thought kale was really hardy.
I know, and it's not. So I definitely had to. The problem with flea beetles too is that there's not a lot of predators out there for them, and they're treating them. Oh man, it's really hard. What a lot of times what growers will do is plant the crops that are sensitive and then immediately cover them with a row cover fabric as a physical barrier to keep the flea beetles off. That's not always possible in a home garden, especially if you've got your plants kind of mixed in with other things. You can put out yellow sticky cards. It's like a flypaper almost, but like there's, you can buy them in small packs and there's holders you can stick them in. And what those do is they both help monitor your population, but then the adults fly onto them and get stuck and die. And so that it's one way of kind of reducing some of the adult population. There are some sprays, there's some organic sprays out there. They're a little harsh even for an organic spray because flea beetles, it tends to be a spray that is a little more broad spectrum, so it'll kill a lot of other bugs too, sometimes some beneficial insects if they're on the plants when you're spraying. So you definitely have to be careful about using them. I do want to say, like, just because a treatment is certified organic, that doesn't mean that, you want to be spraying it, in a bikini with no protective gear. Yeah. I mean, I still need to put on, like, fully cover all of my skin and put on goggles and sometimes a respirator, even though it's organic, it's still tough. So be careful when you're spraying any treatment. What they end up doing is it's like shot hole. They just chew away at the leaves around the edges, all on the leaves. It's like little tiny holes all over it. And if you look at them, if you see little tiny black insects hopping all over your plants, those are flea beetles. We also have a big problem with cabbage moths, which also love everything in that brassica family, especially kale. And those are these little white moths that you see fluttering all over your garden. They're very lovely, but they turn into these voracious green caterpillars that especially seem to love kale. But also anything like broccoli, cabbage, anything in that family. If you have a small garden, I think honestly one of the best ways is to just hand pick them and squish them. And that's a good way to kind of go out every day, every other day, and just check your plants and see if you see any of those. If you see the cabbage moths flying around, they're probably laying their eggs on your plants. And if you look on the underside of the leaf, you often can find these little clusters of tiny pale yellow eggs. They're almost like the pinhead size. Mm. And those are the eggs. You can just squish them before they turn into something. Wow. But check for the caterpillars as well. It's funny because as I've matured as a farmer, when I first started out, I used to see the caterpillars on the plants and knock them on the ground and step on them. And then after a while, if I was wearing gloves, I would just like pick it off and squish it. And I, at this point now, can just squish those things with my bare hands. I'm just like, I hate you. Go away. I have no problem.
I still take heat from people in Brownsmead for my story about when I first moved to Oregon and I saw a slug in the road and I didn't know what it was. And I was walking and I said, oh, you poor little thing, you're going to get run over. And I moved it to the side of the road. And then I told my neighbors and they were like, you saved a slug's life?
Oh, yeah.
You got to be kidding me. And so anyway,
it's hard. I get it. It's hard. I mean, it can be hard to kill things, and especially if they're going to squish all over you, it can be really gross. Slugs, I have no problem with slugs anymore. Too. I won't squish them with my bare hands, but I don't have a problem killing them, except for banana slugs. I love banana slugs, and they are native, and they mostly live out in the forest. You don't usually find them in the gardens. It's also the mascot of my my alma mater university, UC Santa Cruz, fighting banana slugs. So I can't kill
That's
them.
Really inspiring.
It's like I can't
I
kill
grow
them.
Up and be a banana slug.
I know. Hey, you know.
Actually, it sounds pretty good.
It
on
says a lot about the university I went to. but I am fond
it's
of them.
Relaxing.
And slugs, I mean, the thing is, slugs are part of the ecosystem. They are part of the decomposition process.
Mm-hmm,
and so,
sure.
I mean, what happens with all of these insects that we see showing up in our gardens, you know, all throughout the year, is that they, you know, it's just when they get out of balance, when there's too many of them and there's not enough predators, you know, when they're attacking more of the plants than you want. And it's really about just trying to keep your garden in balance and keep yourself in balance, too. So this time of year in the summer, it's just, you know, there's just a lot going on and there's a lot to harvest, too. And that can feel kind of overwhelming for people to stay on top of. And that's where I think the notebook thing comes back to, where it's like, if you're feeling overwhelmed by a crop, if you really thought that planting 5 zucchini plants was a good idea.
Oh, yeah,
you know, really? That. You know, just write a reminder to yourself next year, just one plant.
Which leads to the drive-by zucchini, dropping it off on people's porches and running.
I know. And it's, I mean, or, but eat, like green beans right now, like if you planted bush beans or pole beans and they're coming on hard and you're feeling overwhelmed, or cucumbers. You know, it's also one of those things where talk to your neighbors that have a big garden, because if you want to do things like make pickles, pickled cucumbers or dilly beans or preserve anything, start asking around, because someone in your neighborhood is probably feeling completely overwhelmed. And if you offer to come and help them pick something, they will probably share that with you, especially
wow.
if you give them back a jar of you know, pickles or jam yeah. or something. So that can be a great way to get to know people in your neighborhood or, you know, in your community garden and share some resources, but also help out someone who maybe has a little bit too much of something.
Zucchini.
And zucchini, I'm learning lots of cool things to do with zucchinis.
I guess one has
because
to, I guess
you just have to, I mean, you just have to. They are very productive plants. And there's a lot of good things you can do with them. So don't just, it's not just zucchini bread, although that can be really good. But you can make relish out of them. You can pickle them. You can make, I just read a recipe for a really nice, like a spread almost, where you like take the zucchini and you cook it down with onions or shallots.
Oh, wow.
And it's almost like, it sounded like something that could maybe be an alternative to that sort of avocado on toast, you know,
oh, yeah.
hip thing that everyone's eating. I'm going, yeah. ooh, what about like, you know, caramelized zucchini on toast? Maybe we could start a trend.
Caramelized zucchini, that sounds
I don't
cool.
know. I mean, I'm willing to try it because I've got a lot of zucchinis right now. So I think that all those things are just finding, making notes to remind yourself next year, don't plant too much of this. Or if you wish you had a lot more of something, it's like, wow, I only planted, you know, 2 bean plants and I could have had, you know, 20. Remind yourself that
yeah.
so that you can remember next year when you're planning out your garden.
Well, you know, I think for people, maybe I can, well, I can speak only for myself, but, you know, I'll just leave it at that. I'll speak only for myself. But, you know, when you think of the idea of having a garden, it mm-hmm. sounds so nurturing and connect with the earth and all this stuff. But it's not like something else that I do in a dabbling kind of way, which is knitting.
Mm-hmm.
You can start knitting something, put it in a bag and forget about it. With a garden, you're starting a process of
yeah.
living things. And what you're saying, it sounds almost like it's a management thing. And, you know, I manage people here. But, you know, when I come
yeah.
to work in the morning, I see how everybody is. And I look and we talk about what we've done and what we're about to do. And you sort of give your attention. I guess that's what it is.
And that
it's
is exactly
your attention to it.
Exactly. I mean, that's a garden. I mean, that's what I do in the morning on the farm. I go walk through the fields and I see how everyone is. We check in with all the plants. You know, I usually have a couple of cats escorting me and they're checking in too. You know, we're all doing our morning chores. But it's
great.
Like, who's producing? Who's not? Who's about? Who needs to get pulled out? You know, what's looking good? Oh, there's some insects showing up over there. Does this need water? And it's very much a similar thing. And in that walkthrough and that check-in, then I make a list of like, and these are the things that I need to take care of. These are the priorities. These are the things that can maybe wait. And it just helps you kind of know. And that's similar in your garden as well. You know, what I would say, Joanne, is that, you know, if I mean, just because you don't have time to have a garden doesn't mean you can't have any garden. I think that maybe it's just a thought of shifting to more perennial-based gardens
oh.
or plants that you can still have a lot of edible plants that are perennials. Oh, so you can have herbs. You can have, there's more like fruit crops. So things like, you know, blueberries or raspberries or strawberries or apple trees.
And they're more hands off.
Yeah. They need like certain maintenance at certain times of year, but they don't necessarily need daily maintenance unless it comes to the picking, you know, when your raspberries are really coming on hard or your blueberries. But here's the thing. If you don't get them picked, the birds are going to eat them, or they're going to fall. You know, it's like, it's not going to be the end of the world. It's not going to kill the plant if you don't pick the fruit. Whereas if you're, if it's snap peas or beans and you're not harvesting them regularly, they will basically mature and start to form seeds and the plants will die and then you're done. So, you know, your blueberry plant's going to come back again next year. It's just, you know, they'll just all fall on the ground.
And so then just here's a really dumb question. But
there are no
dumb questions.
The difference
between an annual and a perennial.
Okay, so an annual is a plant that has a sort of a one-year or one-season life cycle. Because sometimes their life cycles can be 45 days. Like cilantro is a very short-season annual. It can go from seed to seed, you know, in less than 2 months. And then there's some annuals that, like, you plant in, you know, March, and then you harvest them in November, and then they're done. And then the plant dies. So it's that plant does not come back again. You can save seed from it and replant it, but that plant will die. A perennial is a plant that lives, you know, multiple years. Sometimes there's short-lived perennials. There's long-lived perennials or woody perennials like blueberries or rosemary or things like that. Herbaceous perennials are ones that die back to the ground completely. So that would be like chives or some other greens. God, I'm just blanking on them now. So they die back almost to nothing. You don't see them. Rhubarb does this too, where it dies back. You think the plant's dead, but then in the spring it emerges again.
Wow.
It's called an herbaceous perennial. And just to really mess you up, there's also biennials, which are plants that have a two-year life cycle. So the first season that they're growing, leaves emerge. A really good example of this is parsley. This is one that confuses a lot of people. So the first season of a parsley plant, it will emerge and it'll just produce leaves. And it'll go through, it's that first season. And then the next year, it wants to set seed and die. So that's when it starts to shoot up its flower stalks. It'll also shoot up its flower stalks if it's stressed, if it's growing in a container where the roots are contained, if it doesn't get enough water, because it thinks it's dying, so it'll just reproduce early.
Oh.
But if left to its own devices, that first year you're going to get leaves, and then the second year you're going to get the flower stalk, and then it's going to die. You can fight with it for a while, but that's its life cycle. And it doesn't care. If you know, you can keep cutting back those flowers, eventually it's just going to die. So I usually plant a new plant every year, just to know that one that's in its second year is just wants to reproduce.
Wow.
So I know, just to confuse you.
Well,
I know. And we didn't do a station ID. I feel terrible. It's like, I've been so busy talking to you. So I try to do this. So
that's
just in case you're curious, you are listening to Coast Community Radio, which is KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook at 89.5 FM. And we are streaming live at coastradio.org. And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to In Season with me, Teresa Retzloff. And I'm talking with Joanne Rideout, our beloved station manager and engineer today. Joanne claims that she has a black thumb.
Oh boy. My plants could tell you stories.
And I think that it's just that you haven't found the right plants for your garden.
Is that it?
Truly don't think that anyone has a black thumb or a brown thumb. I think it's just that maybe gardening, the growing the kind of plants you're trying to grow doesn't interest you enough or isn't engaging enough, or you know, you have to pay more attention than you think, or it just takes time and experience. I mean, I killed a lot of plants in the course of my career as both a gardener and a farmer, and I continue to kill plants just horrifically. There's a lot of death on my farm, and not all of it intentional.
The drama of life and death.
It's just that, you know, I've been doing it long enough now that I mostly know what works and what doesn't, and what I'm good at and what I'm not. And there's some plants that I just seem to like, we don't have a good relationship, me and some plants. And, you know, and then other ones where it does really well. So gravitate towards the things that do well, gravitate towards the things that that interest you, that bring you pleasure. And, and you know, if you want to have a garden, but you just don't have time to have a garden, I do think the perennials can be a good way to go, because it's
That's
like
a
couple times a year, you do some maintenance, you prune them, put out some mulch, and then the rest of the time you get, you know, flowers or fragrant herbs or a little bit of fruit, and you can plant things that attract birds and, you know, beneficial insects, and you can get the pleasure of watching that.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly it can thrive on some benign neglect, especially if you pick plants that are drought tolerant.
Mm-hmm.
And don't really need water, you can set up a garden that you don't even really have to think about watering it.
Ooh, that's appealing.
I know.
Especially after I told you, we had this funny discussion like a couple of years ago when I had a garden and I thought, ooh, I'll put it on auto timers and water it. And then I got my $380 water bill and Teresa said, that's the water bill for my entire farm for a month. It was very embarrassing. It was when I realized I was obviously not being a mindful gardener for
sure. Well, it's true, but there are also a lot of things there's plants that don't want to be watered that much. And I think what's hard is that for a lot of times people want to have their gardens just be something that that you can kind of just put it in and then forget about it. And I think especially if you're doing any kind of annual gardening or you're doing any kind of produce, you know, vegetable growing, you can't just plant your garden in May or June and then, you know, take a month's holiday.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can. I should say, because I know my friend Jane just did this, but she had someone coming to look after her garden for her, and she did have automatic water system going, and she had someone that was coming to harvest and keep an eye on things.
Garden sitting.
And so, I think if you are going to do that, you definitely need to have someone check in, because mm-hmm. those kinds of gardens, they just need you to pay attention,
mm-hmm.
and you just have to go out there and harvest, and again, know if it's a plant that, for some plants, things like peas and beans and cucumbers, you need to pick them regularly, usually like a couple times a week, if not like every other day. You want to keep picking it because if you keep picking it, then it's like, oh my goodness, I'm not setting seed. I need to put out more fruits to set more seed. I need to bloom again so I can set more seed so I can, you know, and that's how you keep them producing. But if you just walk away for a week or longer, some of those things will become over mature. You'll get these huge cucumbers on your vines or really mature beans that get kind of, you know, fibrous and not very good. You know, your peas will just get really, and sometimes you can eat those and that's great, but you know, your peas will just get really mature and then they'll start to go brown because they're wanting to reproduce. They don't care whether you have a, you know, stuff to pickle
dinner
or
plans.
Not. No, I mean, they've got a totally other agenda than you do. And part of it is like you working out a relationship with them where you both get some of what you want. And, you know, it's compromise. And so again, this time of year, I think especially it's compromise, you know, because there's also going to be things that you're just going to have to walk away from. You're just going to have to give up on and just say, I can't stay on top of that. And it's okay. You know, it is okay. You know, gardens aren't perfect. Farms aren't perfect. Life isn't perfect. Stuff's going to happen.
Well, I have a question about, so this time of year, there's a sense in the garden that we talked a little bit about earlier, things kind of winding down. But then there are crops that, you know, that thrive through the winter and sometimes even through frost. And
absolutely.
Can we talk a little bit about those winter
I think
crops
it's
and
really,
what do you do with them?
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of plants. We generally have a fairly mild climate here on the coast. I mean, some winters, not so much, but there are a lot of leafy greens, especially that will thrive. And I mean, kale is kind of like that one that everyone talks about. There's other greens that you can plant now. Spinach is a great fall crop for out here. Arugula also likes it cooler. There's a lovely little green called mush, corn salad, which is used in as like a winter salad green. Lettuce is a great fall crop for out here. There's some cooler season varieties. Some of the more romaine types of lettuce are really sturdy, and they can often tolerate some frost. If you're willing to invest in a little bit of row cover fabric, some like blankets that you put over your garden, things like chard will often go sometimes all through the winter. If we have a mild enough winter, it can last. And again, it kind of depends on where your garden is.
Yeah.
If you're very close to the ocean, it tends to be milder. It's not so bad. If you're, you know, out in Brownsmead or out in Olney where I am or out in Jewell, it's going to get a lot colder and some of these things may not work. So part of it's getting to know your garden. But there are a lot of things that you can do through the winter. Where you can have those great greens. And then especially with things like some of the brassicas like kale, the thing to know is that with all of those plants, they start to shut down their growth process around mid-November when the days get really short because they're triggered by day length.
Right, okay.
And so what you find is like right around, it seems like mid-November, they just kind of stop growing. So if you're planting things now and they're getting big enough by that time so that you can keep harvesting on them. And I sort of harvest gently between, you know, November and like mid-January, round about mid-January, the days are definitely starting to get longer again. And you don't always notice it, but they are. And the plants know it. They start to leaf out again. And usually by February, you get some, you know, beautiful flushes of growth. Wow. And you can get some more harvest. And then March is when a lot of those kind of biennial plants, which kale, also a biennial, so that two-year life cycle, it'll start to send up flower shoots. And they look a lot like little stalks of broccoli. And people call it kale rob is what people call them,
really?
Like broccoli rob,
and
but kale rob.
Them.
And you can eat them and they're delicious. And so you can get a whole other crop
wow.
off your plants. I mean, eventually, again, they're going to win. They're going to flower.
Yeah.
But then also, if you leave those beautiful yellow flowers in late winter, early spring, that's really important for pollinators. They love those early brassica flowers. And so it's kind of a benefit for you. You get this late crop of little, you know, florets that you can eat. You can still eat the leaves. And then once it finally does go to flower, your pollinators are going to be so happy. The early bumblebees and honeybees and other bees that are out there are just, they're starving at that point and they really need some stuff to eat. So
and
it's
so,
a win.
And so once they flower, that changes the taste, and so it's not usually good to eat them once
yeah.
they flower? Is that
Well, you can still eat, for brassicas and things like that, I still eat the leaves even when they're flowering. I'll break off the flower stalks, but once it's really gone to flower and you've got the yellow flowers all over it, it's really more focused on producing the flowers and it really stops producing leaves, and so there's not really a lot of leaf left. And especially for certain plants like lettuce and things like that, once they start to bolt, which is what it's called when they send up their flower stalk to reproduce, the lettuce gets more bitter. A lot of times greens turn a bit more bitter when
okay.
they bolt, and so they're not as good. So yeah, there's potential. Don't give up on your garden yet. There's a lot to do. Just try and enjoy it. Just try and take some moments to enjoy it and spend some time out there appreciating the abundance of the season. And Joanne, you should just come over and harvest some of my garden.
Maybe I could do that. I can help you with some of those zucchinis that
you
want.
That sounds great. I will bring some into the studio next time I come.
That's great.
I know. Thanks so much for talking to me today. I know we're just about out of time. And,
yeah.
and I just don't give up on your garden.
Okay,
you don't have a black thumb. You do not have a black
thumb.
Well,
I really realize
it's a little brown.
That it is a matter of attention to
yeah.
whatever you're doing. And,
yeah.
you know, when you want to do something well, you have to give it your attention. Duh.
Yeah.
It's kind of an obvious thing. But, you know, I think because there is so much of a kind of a romance around gardening that you kind of, if you're really busy like me, you sort of want to get the good stuff without having to do the work to get it. You know,
absolutely.
And with the garden, you really do have to kind of be there.
You do,
to get it to
yeah,
happen.
Yeah, there's no free
important.
Ride with a garden.
Yeah.
You've got to show up and do the work.
well, thank you, Teresa.
Know,
this has been really
it's
fun.
It's been really fun, Joanne. Thanks so much.
Well,
bye.
We're going to play some theme music.
Sounds good.
Must be